I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development and Policy Committee to order. We have three different bills today. And the first one is Representative Hugo.
Who? Oh, what do you know?
Yes. Representative Uglum. And it's apparently there's an amendment to that. So I'll let you move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is 2762, the cosmetology amendment or a bill, and I have the A2 amendment before you that
where
I'd like to move.
Where did you want to send it?
This will not have to be sent anywhere. It will not have to go back to GovOps.
Would you like to? Would you be more interested in sending it to the floor?
Let's move it to the general register.
There
sir.
You go, sir. Members, we've heard this bill, and most everything that we've heard, we don't need to hear it again. We just need to re-refer it. But there's an amendment that I'd like to get it in order, the order that the author wants, and has been agreed. Now, this is actually something that would be done in state gov, if I'm correct with the amendment. It's a expedited rulemaking amendment?
Correct.
Okay. So why don't you move your A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment to the bill.
Well, Representative Uglum, would you please explain what the A2 amendment is doing?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment changes the good cause exemption to expedited rulemaking exemption. The Board of Cosmetology shall adopt rules to implement the statutory changes made in this act. The board must use expedited process according to Minnesota statute section 14389. The expedited process or the will provide for really a tighter process versus the good cause. It'll be quicker, a little cleaner. It also requires the board to give public notice and take public comment for any changes. That's pretty much the advantage of going that way. It seems as if that's highly recommended by staff also.
And Representative Uglum, I want to make sure here, because this is really not the purview of this committee. Have you talked to Representative, I think it's Representative Nelson's committee that this would rulemaking would normally go to? Have you talked to Representative Nelson?
I have talked, Mr. Chair, I have talked to staff this morning about that and been assured that this does not have to go back to GovOps.
Okay. Members, having heard the A2 amendment, all those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. You have the amendment on in the shape that you would like it. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, do you have any final remarks before we move, we re-refer to the general register?
No, Mr. Chair, I do not.
Thank you. So Representative Uglum renews his motion for House File 2762 be re-referred to the general register as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. You're on your way to the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members. I'm going to do it from the chair here. Representative Dean has a architect, engineer, land survey, landscape that was laid over for possible inclusion, and we have made a decision to move it just to the general register. So I'm going to, if there's no objections, I would like to just do that and move it to the, because we've heard this bill already. And just move it over to the general register and be done with it. Is there any objections to the chair just moving the bill?
Mr. Chair, just briefly, what is the bill again? I know we heard this.
It is the Architect Engineering Land Survey, and the House Research looks like it's more like the unsession, so to speak. lists activities and terms, clarifies meaning of land survey, strikes some obsolete language, streamlines some language in Section 6. In Section 7 specifies 48 is the maximum number of professional development hours needed. Section 8 dedicates 2 hours of professional development instruction on ethics. Section 9 limits professional development hours earned to those earned in the biennium. Section 10 increases from 2 to 4 years the length of time after the end of licensure period that the certificate holders must maintain records. And 11, cease and desist orders authorize the board to issue cease and desist orders for unauthorized use of specified titles. And I think that's the PE, professional engineer, versus just putting alphabet soup behind your name. If there's some objections, we'll put it on the back burner and we won't deal with
objections.
It. Representative Albright, did you have a question?
I do recall this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the questions that were raised the first time we heard this in committee had to do with the repealer of 326.107 with regard to this continuing education requirement, as it would pertain to outside the purview of Minnesota statute, and whether or not other states' CE credits would be held up in the state. And I'm wondering if anyone knows if that got fixed, or if we just have a better understanding in terms of reciprocity between continuing ed. I think that was brought up, whether or not the purposefulness for the 2 hours of credit and ethics mm-hmm. was conforming with outside requirements from other states.
I don't know. I don't know if it's been keyed up or not. But if there's a question about that, we certainly can just hold this bill up and we'll go find Representative Dean.
I don't think that it's a deal breaker. I think just a point of reference that's what we brought up in committee last time, and we just wanted to make sure that we're not holding up someone's licensure from being approved from an outside state with that ethics responsibility in there.
Well, thank you. What I'll do is I'm going to move this, ask for a vote to move this to the House floor, but I would make sure that's quite the good question to befumble somebody on the House floor. So if Representative Dean doesn't catch up with you, he might.
Representative Ward actually brought it to my attention. So,
all right, members, I'm going to move that House file 2670 be re-referred to the General Register. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. House file 2670 is on its way to the floor. Let me get rid of some of my paper. Do we have minutes? Okay. All right. Is Representative Dornhold in the room?
Yeah. Yes. I am.
Oh, there you go. Why don't you quickly come on up? Welcome to the committee. Is this your first time in this committee? No. Damn. I was looking for some treats. I just didn't have dessert at lunch. Representative Dornhold, we're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in tonight's bill. It's amazing how things can work very quickly around here.
Much appreciated.
So would you care to present your House file 3180 for the members so I don't get any questions on the bill tonight?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair and members, for something that's important in Minnesota, and also really my district. I've seen the tangible benefits of the Job Skills Partnership Program. Tangible, bipartisan. My friend King Bannon here makes sure I read his reports on the quarterly business report, and something I just wanted to show out is he does a survey, and this is through St. Cloud Central, the Minnesota area, and of these questions to all the businesses. And one of the questions is, your company's difficulty attracting qualified workers. In the past year, it's been a 23% increase. And that this has helped those qualified workers, help those companies get the qualified workers they need. And to speak a little bit about the bill, as someone who has told me hasn't been in front of the committee in 12 years, so it's a long time waiting for something that really has tangible benefits in greater Minnesota, is specifically with a major skills gap that we need to fill. We have the ability and the potential. So here to say more about that.
Mr. Moe, good to see you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
For the tape.
Pleasure to be here. My name is Paul Moe. I direct the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program, and I've done so for the last 9 years. It's a, in my belief, the best incumbent worker training program in the nation. We work on skill development of Minnesota workers, needed unmet business training needs, and improvement, extension of curriculum capacity throughout our training institutions. We've been in effect in Minnesota since for 30 years, and since 1984. We stole the idea, go NCSL, from another state, Massachusetts, Bay State Skills Corporation, and brought it to Minnesota in 1984. We started out with a modest budget, about $1.5 million. In the year 2000, there was about $14 million a year. In 2007 and 2008, respectively, it was about $17 million. We are at $4.2 million. We work with every size company in Minnesota. We link with accredited training institutions. We've done work with, you name a Minnesota company, we've probably worked with it. You name an accredited training institution, we've probably worked with it. All public training institutions. All branches of the University of Minnesota have done a Minnesota Job Skills Partnership grant. All branches of the University of Minnesota have done a Minnesota Job Skills Partnership grant. St. Scholastica out of Duluth have done Job Skills Partnership grants. St. Catharines, St. Thomas University, Concordia of St. Paul. Any accredited training institution can do grants with the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program. Our centerpiece program is the partnership program. We can award up to $400,000. Keep in mind, this is a dollar-for-dollar business match. For every dollar the state of Minnesota puts in, business is required by law to match a dollar. In the 30-year history of the program, we've averaged over $2 match from Minnesota businesses from every dollar contributed. To give you a rough idea, in the 30-year history of the program, I'm guessing the state tax dollars, roughly about $150 million, we've leveraged well over $350 million for Minnesota businesses and another $50 million from accredited training institutions, although they are not required. So it's a requirement to match dollar for dollar. We average over 2-to-1, and we leverage more than that. We've been involved in the skill development of literally tens of thousands of Minnesota workers, hundreds of Minnesota businesses throughout the last 3 decades. We have a short-form application for mom-and-pop shops for small numbers of employees, up to $50,000, very easy to apply. We also have a Pathways program, and that is rather than a dollar-for-dollar match, that's a $1.50 match for people at or below 200% of poverty. And also we have a low-income worker grant application, which is totally different than the partnership and Pathways and our other offerings, in that basically it's a placement program for that. But the partnership program, as I mentioned, has been around for years. The key word to the MJSP is partnership. To give you an idea, here's a clipping from the Hibbing Times. We did a grant with Cleveland Cliffs and Joy Global and so on and so forth, and there was a $100,000 donation for a simulator a truck. I shouldn't say truck, monster truck, iron ore truck. The wheels are as high as this room, and a very sophisticated training. And things like this have happened throughout the history of the Job Skills Partnership over the past 30 years.
Any added comments, Representative Dornholt?
I'll save your time for questions.
Are there any questions other than the first one from the chair? Your second, then. Mr. Moll, I'm going to ask you, this is $1.6 million, $1 million, $600,000 immediately, but it's actually $1.6 immediately, and $1 million in the base ongoing. So what's your plans for the $1.6 million?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this if I were to show you the funding history of the program, for prior to 2000, prior to 2009, the Job Skills Partnership Program operated with a budget of about 13.6 a biennium. We currently operate with a budget of 8.4 for the biennium. And the utilization has been skyrocketing lately. The last grant round, we had 12 partnership applications, one pathway application, and five short form applications involving 18 Minnesota businesses. And we ran over, we were $700,000 out. So, but thanks to the Workforce Development Fund, the funds were transferred to the Job Skills Partnership Program. But this this $1 million ongoing will be a tremendous asset to the program, tremendous asset. We would be at $5.3 million, which is still a little bit less than we had been operating for the previous decade. And I might share with the committee that we're seeing more and more and more utilization as many of people my age in the baby boom era are moving out of the workplace. I'm hearing a tremendous amount from especially Minnesota manufacturers. Keep in mind that the lion's share of Minnesota Job Skills Partnership funds go to Minnesota manufacturers. There is a tremendous skills shortage going on, and more companies are looking to the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program to help fill that gap.
Right. Skills gap might also be somewhat of a pay gap, but having made my comment from the peanut gallery, Representative Albright, did you have a question?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. And for Mr. Moll, and to the point that the chair raised as well, and I'm curious, and I have a couple follow-ups, Mr. Chair, but in your opinion, as you've been responsible for this partnership over the years and in recent history, you're articulating a lack or a gap in the skills of employees. Is that pursuant to education? Is it pursuant to the technology that we see in the workforce or the lack thereof? Or what can you attribute to the skills gap? Or what are organizations looking for that is not being provided to the people that they are employing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to a large degree, it's technology. I'll give an example. I was at a grant signing ceremony in Elk River at a manufacturing facility in Elk River about a month ago, and they had older generation machining tools, and this company had just purchased two brand new Japanese machining tools. That those two machines, this is really quite fascinating and quite poignant. The owner pointed over his shoulder and he said, "We'll replace 15 of those workers," which was really quite stunning. But then, of course, they needed individuals to learn to run these tools, which were much more sophisticated, and not only that, to repair those tools as well. Bismarck Tool and Die, for example, out of Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, that does manufacturing for Articat and Polaris and a number of other industries, used to, in the past, weld their tube welding, round welding. My father was a welder. Very difficult to weld around a tube. And they purchased a brand new welding machine from Italy. And this welding machine was roughly as wide as these two tables, and all the welding was done by a computer and flawless. And it's just so that this rapid onset of technology, when I grew up going to a shop and watching my father weld, it would be a dirty, sort of a tough, smoky environment. And the manufacturing facilities that I've walked in throughout Minnesota are just amazing. It's just, if you get an opportunity, go see your local manufacturer. It's quite fascinating. So technology, skill development of incumbent workers, I think, is critical. Many young people come out of, let's say, high school or technical college or college and move into these arenas, and the tools change, and there is a tremendous need for on-the-job incumbent worker training to bring them to the next level for many of these companies. After manufacturers, healthcare and human services would be number two, and then a variety of other Minnesota companies. We can work with any and all companies in Minnesota from the highest level to the lowest level.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the light of that, Mr. Moe, I'm just curious if you see a shifting for the funding away from the business side to the educational side in lieu of your previous answer.
Well, the beautiful thing about the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program, it's a combination of all three. To me, it's a perfect equilateral triangle. It's needed business training. If it can be purchased over the marketplace, and I get these calls all the time, I urge that company to go and buy that product, okay? Because it's critical to understand that it's needed unmet business training. With a budget of $4.2 million, that grants at $400,000, if it was all business training, we'd be out of money in the first 20 seconds of operation. So it's needed unmet business training. And then linked to that is some type of creation of curriculum and capacity within our training institutions, whether it's a training tool such as this or it's a new credit-based a credit for college or a technical college or a certification or a certificate.
Representative Hugo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a little bit of a follow-up on that, Mr. Mole. Like, when you're providing this training and everything else, how do you interface with some of our technical schools and technical colleges with the interaction between your office, business, and the schools?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. Very good question.
It's a family trait to speak a long time with the Moe family.
Forgive me. We are tied together with customized training directors throughout in Minsky, for example. There's roughly 250 customized training directors. The first point of contact should be for a business to contact a dean of customized training at one of our institutions and then call me. And so we work very closely. I'm speaking at the MNSAT conference, which is coming up in about 3 weeks, which is all the customized trainings in MNSCU. I make the rounds throughout the state. I meet with our private institutions. We work with any accredited training institution in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Seeing none. All those in favor, well, we're not. We're just laying this bill over. So I'm going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in tonight's omnibus bill. Thank you for presenting today. Appreciate it. And it's good to see you in the committee. I've seen you in the audience for many years, but get you up to the table every once in a while. And
Mr.
Thank
Chairman,
you again.
Thank you. It's been 12 years. So thank you.
I guess I get to go.
Pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
Mr. President. Here you go, John.
We're going to do the chairman's bill.
This could be rough. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, this is going to the floor, I think.
Yes. Register.
I'd like to move House File 2947 and have it re-referred to the General Register. A little type A personality there.
And you have,
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, the A14 amendment.
And we'll move that amendment and get it in front of us. And
I would like to move the A14 amendment, and I'll explain what the A14 amendment does. It clarifies, and I'll probably get corrected, but my understanding is that it clarifies the continuing education needed for a boiler license so that the boiler operators can work and go to school at the same time.
Members of the committee, John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry. This, my understanding is this continuing ed requirement, the chief boiler inspector for the state of Minnesota had some rulemaking authority, and the clock on the rulemaking expired, so we're starting the clock again and reinstating this continuing ed requirement. That's what the amendments needed, why it's needed now.
Discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Rakowski to explain 2947, which is the housekeeping bill for Department of Labor and Industry.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The bill in front of you combines the agency's attempt to eliminate obsolete and repetitive statutes. That's the Article 3. We'll call that the unsession article. Article 1 are clarifying changes to the Office of Combative Sports. The Commissioner Ken Peterson also serves as the Commissioner of the Office of Combative Sports, and it's a highly regulated in the highly regulated activity. We license boxers as well as mixed martial artists. We received this responsibility in July 1st of 2012. Last year, we came before the committee with numerous changes and updates to the statute because it hadn't been updated for a number of years. Mr. Gunther recalls when it was the Combative Sports Commission.
Don't get us involved.
All right. But it was the Senate anyway. I'll say that. This is why we inherited this. The commission doesn't no longer exist, so it falls under the department. And what we found out as we continue to explore this statute were some more clarifying changes, and I'll just highlight a few of them for you. We learned in the last year that the actual definition of martial arts isn't in statute, and we had some promoters getting around this by just sponsoring or putting on kickboxing events. We don't regulate kickboxing, so we wanted to make sure that a martial arts combines two or more martial arts, such as judo, jiu-jitsu, et cetera, some of you have seen some of these events on television, so you realize what I'm talking about. That's Section 4. Section 6 clarifies that the commissioner has discretion over the amount of time a person needs to wait before applying for a license if their license has been revoked. This is a young man and woman's sport, and sometimes if their license is revoked for over a year, they could stand to actually end their career because they've been out of the ring for so long or the cage. Also, Section 8 and 9 clarifies the requirements for a promoter's license. Some of you may know that the promoters, there's about half a dozen promoters in this state, and when a new one wants to get involved, such as none other than Mike Tyson, he had to take he had to do an affidavit, and he was promptly received the license. He promoted a fight here at the Twin Cities in January that was on ESPN Live. The other statutes, 9 through 12, clean up unnecessary words and things like that. It was our on-session exercise. Article 2, I'll stop if there's any questions on Article 1. Otherwise, I'll move to Article 2. There are none. Article 2 focuses on the construction code and licensing division at the department. As many of you know, we are the administrators of the state building code, the energy code, the accessibility code, the plumbing code, I could go on, the high pressure piping code. And these involve about, these touch about 130 individuals or businesses. We license or certify over 130,000 individuals in this state. So we're constantly tweaking this statute to make it more user-friendly. For example, we permit some, in Section 1, we permit some licensees to apply for a license renewal more than 2 years after the license has expired. They hadn't been able to do that. A quirk we found in the bill, John Schultz, who is head of our electrical division, we're clarifying that elevators in residential homes are not subject to operating permit fees after the initial operating permit fee. I do know a person who has an elevator in her home. She still has it inspected every year regardless. So we're not prohibiting that in any way. Article 7 came to us from the Insurance Federation. It clarifies that a consumer has the right to cancel a contract with any residential contractor or roofer within 72 hours after learning that the consumer's insurance claim had been denied. That was a clarifying one. And number 8 clarifies that the commissioner can take enforcement action against a qualified person of a residential building contractor. Residential builders are a little different breed, if you will, compared to a boiler operator or a high-pressure pipe fitter, because they have to be knowledgeable in several different areas of the code, not just one. So then the on-session obsolete and redundant statutes in Article 3. One and two remove several dates that are no longer applicable. We found this throughout our statutes. When a bill is passed, there are certain deadline dates that are required. You may recall, some of you, the Safe Patient Handling Act of about 6 years ago that allowed nurses. Well, you see them in nursing homes a lot, these portable lifts now. And there were requirements in statute there that had dates that have long been gone, over 10 years now. So Section 9 is another one where we remove requirements for exit sign illumination that's covered under the Energy Code. You'll see several pages under Section 13 that are being repealed. This incorporates by reference the Interstate Compact on Industrialization Modular Buildings.
You don't do that. You don't do that anymore, do you?
Well, it was originally put in statute as an interstate compact, and we don't need to have it there because we can just issue it, refer to it by reference. The other big one is Section 14. Some of you may recall there was a time when a job seeker would actually pay an employment agency to find them work. That practice is pretty outdated now. Usually the employer hires an agency to find the available workers. There are still two employment agencies here in the Twin Cities that we license, and we're removing that, we're repealing that. And then there are some other sections in 14 that repeal outdated statutes regarding the accessibility code, and Article 4 removes the reference by repealed statute. So ladies and gentlemen, that is the department's 2014 on-session housekeeping bill.
As amended.
As amended.
Questions on the bill? Representative Lugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess Mr. Rutkowski, Is there a provision in the bill that says that the Department of Labor and Industry would possibly not have to have their office in Minneapolis or St. Paul? You'd be able to move?
Mr. Kowski.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, that's an excellent question. That was the other night when we did the workers' comp bill. We included several repealers under that. And it was required that the agency be located either in Minneapolis or St. Paul. So that was under the work comp division.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hugel.
I know that Representative Fabian or Representative Ward were hoping it would be someplace else, but
we don't have enough housing for government agencies up there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Anybody in the audience looking to testify for or against? Nobody's jumping up.
I'd like to renew my motion as amended for House File 2947 to be referred to the General Register as amended.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Bill's on its way. Okay.
Oh.
Did you get your piece of paper back?
Division of Workers' Comp, which states among other things, unless it's office of
Representative Murphy, nice to have you in the committee. I have so many questions today. Did you behave yourself? No. We're going to lay your bill over today, so I would like you to. I will move House File 1881 for possible inclusion in tonight's bill. But I see we have a delete all amendment. So why don't we? Do I have that delete all amendment? There I have the delete all amendment. So with that, I will move the DE1 amendment. And if you would like to explain what the DE1 amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm really, really delighted to be here today to talk with you about the Office of Regenerative Medicine. And the DE1 is essentially a redraft of the same idea after getting some input from the chair and others about how we may proceed with this idea. And I'm here today with Dr. Andre Tursik from the Mayo, and he's going to spend a little time talking about his experience. But I want to tell you just a little bit about an experience I had this summer at the University of Minnesota and my visits to Mayo, and what has inspired me, and I know others have been working on this issue prior to me, including the chair, and why I think it's time for us to take action on this issue. One of the things I like best about being a legislator is the opportunity to learn about different things that are happening in the state of Minnesota. And as most of you know, I'm a registered nurse, and I first practiced nursing at the St. Joseph's Hospital in Marshfield, Wisconsin, and I was a surgical nurse. And I worked in the operating room and took care of people with cancers and chronic diseases and did a lot of vascular surgery. And one of the things that we did in Marshfield, Wisconsin, was on occasion harvest organs from someone who was brain dead and had given their permission for that. And so sometimes we would take skin or eyes and sometimes vital organs. And I was interested in that mostly because of its innovation and its importance in terms of life. And when I chose to move to Minnesota, I decided to work at the University of Minnesota Hospital in surgery there because I knew that the organs that were being harvested across the country were then being transplanted in that hospital. And so I served as a part of the surgical transplant team with Dr. Sutherland and Dr. Nigerian, and learned about organ transplantation, livers, kidneys, pancreases, and the gift of life that comes from that kind of transplantation. I think my interest as an individual, as a human, and as a nurse has really inspired me around this issue. And over the summer, I had the good opportunity to visit the Stem Cell Institute at the University of Minnesota and to meet Dr. Jacob Tolar. And he has a very persuasive story to tell about the opportunity that we have here in Minnesota on a couple of fronts. One, the one I think that is our moral opportunity, and that is to be able to treat and cure disease. And I think that that's real for us and exciting. And if those of you that have served on Health and Human Services, or those of you who have listened to those of us who have served on Health and Human Services, recognize the pressure on our budget. I know not everybody wants to do that, but if you recognize the pressure on the budget in Health and Human Services, we know a lot of that pressure comes from chronic conditions like diabetes. And I think that a regenerative medicine institute is going to give us an opportunity not only to pursue treatment and cure for diseases like that, but will also give us an opportunity to put ourselves on the front line again in terms of biomedical science and discovery and the economic development that that comes from that. And so the bill that I introduced was a little more ambitious than this one in terms of the funding and the way that we funded it, and we've scaled that back because the other thing that I've learned is that talking with experts has shown me that we could do a little more in terms of understanding the best way to build this out. I've had good advice from the chair and from others as well. And so we are creating a regenerative medicine office at the Department of Economic Development here in the state of Minnesota, or that's what our proposal is. And they are tasked with meeting with experts to build a 10-year plan to pursue this idea and the gift that it could bring to Minnesota. And with that, I'd like to turn to Dr. Tursik, and he can talk a little bit more about the science, which I love to hear about, but he can describe it more eloquently than I. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And Dr. Tursik, please identify yourself for the tape and tell us about regenerative medicine.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andre Tursik, and I'm the director of the Center for Regenerative Medicine at the Mayo Clinic. I have been with the Mayo Clinic now for 22 years, and I'm trained as a physician scientist. I truly appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, and Mr. Chair, committee members, specifically I would like to discuss the importance brought forward of this initiative by Majority Leader Murphy. I think the timing of this discussion is indeed most appropriate, as on one hand, as Majority Leader pointed out, the unmet needs of our patients, the population at large in terms of chronic diseases that I will come back to underscore further, but on the other hand, the immense opportunity of the technologies that are being built in this state and provide a foundation for the future. I think the state of Minnesota has a unique opportunity to leverage the strengths of our institutions, namely the University of Minnesota, Mayo Clinic, and others across the state, and position the state in a highly competitive way in this incredibly promising field of medicine. Why we believe it's so incredible? I think we are at the cusp of truly transforming medicine. I think what we have done over centuries, over decades, has been what we call today traditional medicine. In other words, we have been able to go as healthcare providers after the symptoms of disease. Rarely have we been able to even utter the words of going after a cure, a term that you use. Regenerative technologies do allow us for the first time to evolve really the model of care, going beyond indeed symptoms increasingly towards offering cures to patients. And when we speak of this transformation, we truly speak of a disruptive innovation that these technologies do allow. So on one hand, using your terms, we have a moral obligation to secure this transition from treatments to cures, but with this obligation also come a tremendous benefit for healthcare as a whole, because the opportunity that regenerative technologies do bring is essentially also an opportunity to reduce the cost of healthcare. So the whole affordable issue of the Healthcare Act and other activities that are being debated are also very much underscored by the opportunities that the technology do bring. I think for this committee, what may be of interest is that this technology is very much built on our increasing understanding of how our own body heals. So we know very well that when we cut ourselves, the skin will heal very well. We can give part of our liver to a patient in need, the liver will regrow. But what we have learned more recently is that other parts of our body also can heal. Let's say our heart, although not as efficient as skin, does renew itself to some extent. So we don't die with the same heart we have been born with. So regenerative medicine comes as a way to boost this ability of self-repair, of self-healing. And the state of Minnesota, through a number of organizations that we have across the state, has really harnessed these advances. So we are at a key moment where moving the promise of regenerative medicine beyond the bench, increasingly to the bedside, with many successes across treating heart diseases, across treating, let's say, diabetes, treating other type of chronic conditions such as neurological conditions, mitochondrial disease, other type of conditions that we have difficulties to even address in the past. We're moving it from a model bench to bedside, increasingly bench to bedside to marketplace. And this is, I think, where the opportunity really lies. As healthcare providers, I think we're bound not only to limit ourselves to do the discovery translation paradigm that we're all very familiar with, but go all the way to apply it to patients and ultimately to position our state in being a leader in terms of the marketplace as well. So in closing, we believe that this is a very timely initiative for the state of Minnesota to engage in this evolving field. There is indeed a significant opportunity for investment and growth in this field. And a coordinated statewide effort will help drive even more investments into our state. We accordingly look forward to work with all of our partners that are envisioned in this legislation, namely the University of Minnesota, also represented here, the Department of Employment, Economic Development, all of you, to ensure indeed that Minnesota holds a leadership position in this field. So in thanking you for this initiative, we look forward in working on this legislation and defining the most appropriate and yet the most comprehensive way to position our state in this emerging transformative area of regenerative medicine. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Tursik, we arranged his travel plans today. He's going to a regenerative medicine conference out in New York, is that right?
Yeah, this is also maybe of interest to this committee. I think a number of states are extremely vigilant in this field, and the investment community is starting to become a key partner. So this particular, indeed, conference that you're mentioning is very much in this field of investments in the regenerative medicine area. Thank you.
So I'm grateful that you rearranged your travel plans so you could be with us today. And I really wish that Dr. Toler from the University of Minnesota could be with us as well, because he is very inspiring and very persuasive in his pursuit of this idea. And I will tell you that when I spent some time there this summer, I was with Christine Keel as well from the University of Minnesota, and I think she could tell by the content of the questions I was asking that I had an interest in this issue beyond maybe what they had thought about in terms of a legislative agenda. So I went ahead in that old adage of asking forgiveness rather than permission to pursue the idea. And gratefully, the University of Minnesota is also very excited about this issue and supports the effort. And she's here as well if you have questions for the University of Minnesota. But I do think for so many reasons. This is an important time for us, an historic moment for us here in Minnesota, and it's something that we can do today with Chair Mahoney's help and the support of this committee's with your support and your attention, that we can move this idea forward here, do some planning, and get after this issue for the state of Minnesota, not only for the impact on people's health, but also for the health of our economy going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We have some questions. We have Representative Albright, myself, and Ward, and then we have Representative Kiefer. So, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this first question would actually be a bit of a parliamentary question for you, Mr. Chair, in terms of, I would understand that this, the original bill as it stood prior to the DE would not have met the deadline from last Friday. And is it your opinion that based upon the DE that it would not need to pass through a policy committee prior to?
Representative Albright, we are a policy and a finance committee, so this being a finance bill falls under the purview of this committee and this deadline, so yes. And I would never have sent, I would try to never send anything to the Health and Human Services Committee. I've been there myself only once, and I swore I would never go back.
Well, I don't know. It's a lot of fun.
So is beating my head against the wall. Sometimes. So
got a Band-Aid for that.
I'll give you, members, we have six people. We have about 25 minutes. So keep your questions or comments brief, but you had a follow-up.
I do. Thank you. And this would be for the author of the bill. And Representative Murphy and I have had a couple of very good and productive conversations on this, so I'm in support of this bill as well. But I do have a question for you, Representative Murphy, as it would pertain to research that would consider either cord cell or embryonic stem research. And we have statute 145.421 and 145.422, and I'm just looking for assurance based upon going forward that we would adhere to those two statutes.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, yes, it is my understanding that we would adhere to those, as well as the federal policy put in place under George W. Bush.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I think this is a great start. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright and Representative Murphy. I have more of a comment than a question. And I was grateful that you were open to having the Mayo and the U come back with a clearer plan next year. For the simple fact that, and I want the whole committee to understand that there have been attempts at stuff like this in the past, not only just here in Minnesota, but in other states. And what happens is an accelerator gets put together, and that's what this really is at some level an accelerator. And then as members, they don't put in the excess, the extra money that it takes to run the accelerator. And running an accelerator is anywhere from $1 to $3 to $5 million. The state of Wisconsin puts in about $4 million a year to run their accelerator. So this is a commitment, and understand that the state of Wisconsin has a pretty good accelerator and does a really good job with creating businesses out of it, and their return on investment is pretty good. As we move this forward and they come back next year, this is a long-term commitment on the committee, no matter who's in charge, to try to figure out a way to continue to fund the accelerator and the research. So I hope the university and Mayo can figure how best to make that particular work. That's my comment. And Representative Ward, you had a comment, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had two questions, and Representative Albright asked one of them, so thank you, Representative Albright. But this is fascinating to me, and you know, I heard you talk about diabetes quite a bit as part of this, Representative Murphy, as part of the regenerative kind of issue or condition. What other conditions are being looked at as part of this regenerative medicine kind of a topic or possibility.
Mm-hmm. Doctor?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee representative, this is an outstanding question, and I think, first of all, it's important to underscore that regenerative medicine is truly a multidisciplinary field. It involves essentially all parts of our body. You mentioned diabetes, that will be one example, but many others. For example, cardiovascular disease, heart failure is the number one killer worldwide. It's one of the main focus. Diseases of the bones and joints, very frequent with the aging of the population, is another focus. Neurological diseases such as Parkinson, Alzheimer are another focus. The wounded warrior coming back from the front, many issues related to how to help these individuals is another very big topic. So essentially all fields of medicine and surgery are indeed topics for regenerative medicine. And Majority Leader Murphy mentioned the promises and the success of transplant medicine. We can see regenerative medicine as the next chapter, essentially, of transplant medicine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Doctor, thank you for that response. It's truly fascinating. For example, we know that heart disease and cancer are leaders in death in our nation. But when you look at all deaths across the board, you know, Alzheimer's itself as a death factor is down on the list. But when you look at Alzheimer's included in people that have died that perhaps did have Alzheimer's, it really moves up the list to like number 3 or 4 or something on that. And so, you know, we need so much R&D in that particular area or whatever. And I'm very happy to hear about, the possibility. I was just thinking chronic diseases, but it's far greater than chronic diseases, including our wounded warriors and other people. Doctor, get going so that we can, you need to get to your conference so you can get back here and get going on this. So thank you very much for the future possibilities.
Representative Keeper.
Yeah, I echo a lot of the comments made. I was wondering, Rep. Why am I just calling you Aaron? I'm sorry. Rep. Murphy, sorry. You deleted all, and I was looking at the original bill, and I actually liked some of the provisions better. I just am curious why you took apart this board, which included DEED and HHS, and then you had, you know, some stakeholders, some legislators, and a couple of members of the public. Is there a reason? Is it a cost issue or a logistics issue?
That's Murphy.
First.
Mr. Chair and Representative Keeper, as I mentioned, I was pretty
you
inspired.
You got good advice.
I was inspired by this idea, right, and drafted a piece of legislation looking at a couple of different states. But in consultation with experts, I recognized that spending a little more time on the planning with the experts would help us probably launch a better way. So I think it's possible in the future that we could consider something like that, but at this point, I think this is a better approach, and the chair may have something more to add to that.
Yes, and Representative Kiefer, I actually asked the majority leader to ratchet it back a little bit and sit down, have the two entities that we're asking to collaborate and their respective offices of, for a better word, technology transfer, to come up with a plan that's a little bit more robust and clearer and easier for us to kind of mold around. Because right now, as in the original bill, we're asking the Commissioner of Deed, Commissioner of Health and Human Services, to kind of do business. And that's not what, that's, business is kind of deeds, but it's not the human services world. So I would hope that we can bring this back next year and see what actually needs to be in the bill and have their offices of technology transfer, or their kind of similar one, whatever they got the title for it, and help us actually move these things forward rather than, because we've had a couple of these and they've kind of, they've gotten bogged down in, I won't call them turf wars, but who's really in charge. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that again. That was a lot of energy and effort and didn't go where we needed it to go. And I want this to move forward.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm just
bummed I won't be here next year to support this. I'm very excited. I don't think we're looking for a fountain of youth here, but what the doctor said about this, we're on the cusp of new medical breakthroughs. I firmly believe that. And we can't have our heads in the sand and deny where research is going. And I talk about that on the internet. I'm struggling in my family with a mitochondrial disease, pretty serious. I know that the breakthroughs won't happen in my daughter's lifetime, but I'll do everything I can to support this, and I hope you reach out to me next year.
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kiefer. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I just have comments, too. I'm very excited about this initiative, and I think it just makes absolutely perfect sense for us to leverage our assets that we have here in the state, whether it be the U of M, the Mayo, or our entire med tech community. Having the opportunity to launch an entire new business in the state that's going to end up with much higher paying jobs and just the type of industry that we've had here in Minnesota, and launching it further and moving it further into the future, I think is just an absolutely wonderful idea. It's a small down payment for the ability to start an entire new frontier and make Minnesota the forefront of that. So I think it makes perfect sense, and I'm really excited to be part of it. And I hope, like you say, Chair Mahoney, that this initiative doesn't die, that we move forward and keep this thing going, because it fits. It fits for Minnesota. I really believe that. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Representative Murphy. Where did Murphy come from? Wow.
Mercy.
And also for the chair, too, with regards to the bill and where it's been and where it's going, it's my understanding that this is basically the only stop in this committee, or what is the path? I just want to be clear on that.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. This bill is being heard here and being laid over for possible inclusion, and the committee will make a decision about its future. And then I understand that this bill would go to Ways and Means into the floor. It's also having a hearing in the Senate. It's moving there as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on, I think it was Representative Albright that talked about the bill in the past. I'm confused if we're appropriating dollars and we're talking about medical research. How does this not go to a Health and Human Services Committee? I'm confused by that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, we are creating a mechanism to think about a regenerative medicine office at the Department of Employee, Deed. Thank you. So while we are touching on healthcare and thinking about regenerative medicine, this is really about creating an office to explore the opportunity to do that kind of investment. And at this point, we're just setting up a structure, and so I think appropriate for this committee.
And Representative Fabian, to echo, it's an investment. It's a job research, economic development tool, and I don't think that this has, it may, as an ancillary issue years down the road, have an impact on healthcare, but at the current time, it is more, it shouldn't have that much of an impact on healthcare. It'll have an impact on jobs before it has an impact on healthcare. But you've got a follow-up?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Go
thank
right
you.
Ahead.
I would hope that it has a significant impact on healthcare, is what I'm getting at. And so, Representative Murphy, you want to spend $450,000 over at Deed. I learned... Oh, okay. I heard this bird in my ear, and I learned a word from you over the last couple of years. Originally, in the original bill, you were talking about $8 million in the first year, fiscal year 15, and then the fiscal year 16, it was $9 million, and I heard what you said earlier, but obviously this is a large cut from what you had originally planned. What was involved in the decision to go from the original bill to this bill? And then can you tell me specifically how the money's going to be spent at DEED? You're going to create a new office, but what's the mission? What's the layout? What's the flow chart in terms of how we're going to go about doing these things?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. I was, as I said, very intrigued with this idea, and I think that Minnesota should pursue it, and that's why I put the bill together. But in conversations that I've had subsequently with a number of people with expertise in this, especially with the idea of an accelerator, as the chair has described, but also with the University of Minnesota and with the Mayo, I thought that it would be prudent for us to take this step, this interim step, rather than to just begin to take this interim step to make sure we're setting our course properly. And that's why we've made the decision, I made the decision to go from the bill that it was introduced to this one. We are sending money to DEED to develop the office and a long-term budget going forward. And Representative Mahoney, you may be able to help me with that a little bit more. But I think that very simply, we're creating an office, the means to gather some more information from experts, and the ability to move forward on this idea. I do think that when we come back next session, there's going to be more legislation that we will consider based on this. That may very well go to Health and Human Services, because I agree with you. This is going to have an impact on our future healthcare costs if we're lucky. But this is a big, ambitious idea, and one that I think we need to take our time to make sure we're setting our course clearly, and that's why we've taken this step.
And just to be clear, I asked staff to answer your question, and I'll point to on the delete all amendment, the reason it is in this committee and does not have to go to Health and Human Services is that it is setting up the business development system services and the office, meaning the Office of Regenerative Medicine and Development. Those are the only two things that are really being set up here, and the $450,000 is to set it up correctly and not miss a number of different things. So did you have a follow-up, Representative Fabian?
I do, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to be clear that I'm excited about the possibilities of moving forward with things like this, but too oftentimes I see things. Is there anybody from here, from DEED, that can answer some questions? I mean, what is their vision for how they're going to go about setting this up and spending the money, and how many employees and research and background, and is there a model out there in another state that, I mean, are we reinventing the wheel? Is there something else that works in Massachusetts or wherever where they are accomplishing some of these things?
Well, I'm sure there's someone from DEED here. I will find out if they have a vision, or they're looking for direction from the legislature.
They're not looking at their feet right now, are they?
No, they're looking for a seat.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, there are states that have entered into this work. A couple of states, California, and I believe one out of the East Coast.
Probably Massachusetts.
Yeah, thank you. And so they are up and running already. So they're already doing the research.
Ms. Bavine, nice to see you at the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Kim Bavine, Director of Government Affairs at DEED. Mr. Chair, Representative, the office or the Department of Employment and Economic Development is looking to the legislature for direction. So we don't have the types of detail that you are planning. This is a new bill and would be a new program. So we would be taking direction from the legislature, looking to other states, and looking to others who have done this work to be able to set it up in the right way. But the legislation as laid out clearly says what we are to accomplish, and we would do so looking to other states and others for expertise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that point then, how did we arrive at the number 450,000?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to take that particular question, Representative Fabian. It's basically what I decided to put into the budget. The Senate put in, I think it's $5 million, and I believe $450,000 at this particular time is appropriate. we'll have that discussion as we move forward to see who wins, who has a better idea of what this is going to cost. But remember, I went through the creation of the Office of Science and Technology about 4 or 5 years ago and have looked at some of those numbers, and with inflation, this is just a little bit more than that, because I'm expecting more from this particular office than that. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just my dad always told me, he said, you know, son, what happens when you beat a dead horse, right? It's still dead. But
but at least it's
I guess, the bill has changed. I looked at the date on this one. I'm still curious to know how we've involved the agency, how we've had these discussions. It's changed dramatically. I just want to make sure that we're getting good bang for our buck, and I love the idea of all this stuff, but with all due respect, it just seems like the dog is kind of chasing his tail here a little bit for me, and that's a northern term, so you may have to interpret that. I don't know.
That's a term that's used around my house with the terrier that I have.
Short tail, I bet, too.
Yeah. Representative Murphy, did you have an answer for that? Or would
Mr. Chair, I know the term, so it's not just a northern term. and with that, I think I'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Fabian, I certainly will try to keep you in the loop on all of this. My desire is to work with Mayo and the U, their Office of Technology, whatever they're calling their Office of Technology Transfer at the current time, and use the model of a couple of the accelerators around the nation and what the office in California and in Massachusetts has. And I think New York is looking at some of this stuff. There's a couple other states that are looking at this. Because frankly, there is that accountant streak from my father that he raised 7 kids on 1 salary. There's a little bit of a tight wad in me. Well, I agree with you. I think we do need to do it right and do it as inexpensively as we can, but I really do want to do it right. I don't want to have another disappointment.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, if I may, it would really be helpful for me if I could get some sort of and the committee in itself is what do the stakeholders envision in this? What do they see? What is the role of a government agency? Hopefully they're not going to create a website. Don't do that. What is the role of a government agency in putting this plan together and bringing it forward that the U and Mayo and Altru and Sanford and our medical technology industry has here already? What can we do in government to help them develop these things? It seems to me, in some cases, too often, government kind of does the opposite sometimes. It reduces innovation, and that's what I want to see happen. I want to see the innovation just completely unleashed, you might say, and let the best ideas come forward. But
if that's a comment to the chair, basically, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I think government needs to act more as a pass-through than a hindrance, and I would. That's why I slowed this down and decided that we really need to have the organizations that would be doing the work and the offices of their business transfer more involved than any of our departments. Not because we have bad departments or good departments. It's just that they have multiple tasks, and hopefully Mayo Clinic, University of Minnesota, and let's not forget that Duluth has a med school, if I remember right, and does some research up there, can take these and run with them and move them forward. Because I think those institutions, once you unleash your passion in a scientist, you never know where it's going to end up. But Representative Gunter, you had a question.
More of a statement, Mr. Chairman. I think there were about 4 or 5 of us on this committee that were here when the merger of the University of Minnesota and Mayo occurred, and we built 3 stories on a building in Rochester that they both used for research and development, and we got to go there and see what they were doing there, and we saw them
mapping DNA, and we got to see that they said with protein scraping we could probably eliminate some of these diseases that we are having, and I think this is a second exciting step we have towards that, and I think it will be another one that will be very memorable, and maybe they'll find a cure for diabetes when I have to wear this pump.
It's all about you, isn't it?
Amen. Are there any other comments? Any other Representative Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't see any mention of the genomics partnership in here, but that too was a venture that we did in this committee that I think we just had referenced by my good friend Representative Gunther, and I don't see any mention of that here and how those programs might link together one off another, or if they're completely going to continue to be separate, because I believe the genomics partnership funding is still in the base. And so I'm just curious as to how, if there is any link between the two, and how, Mr. Chair, you might envision that being linked, or whether Representative Murphy has thought about how those might be linked, or Dr. Terzic.
Representative Norton, I'm going to take that as a question to me. I have not put a lot of thought into that. I am open to that with the with the two entities that are named here. I'm only looking to try to figure out how we do something better than we did the last time we did this. So I want them to come back with an office that actually works and moves things forward rather than creates problems for people. So if it's genomics partnership, or it is Mayo, or it is the U of M, or it is Duluth, or it is a partnership with that dreaded Wisconsin, or the MIT, or Stanford, or anybody else, I have no problems with that. I just want the organizations, the academic organizations, the research organizations to come up with the best idea, come back here next year and tell us what they are and see if we agree and then pass it out.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, and you know, as you know, we've talked a lot about this issue over the last 8 years now. It seems to me our vision for the genomics partnership originally had to do with going from research to the bench. And when I talk to folks who are very involved in the genomics partnership, there is a passion for the research, and I think it was unique in that it put those two organizations, Mayo and the university, together in partnership to come up with some great research projects. But I think, as you used to say regularly, I want to see it get to the bench. And I think we just have an opportunity here as we, you know, are moving ahead to look at what the initial idea was, and not to denigrate the research that's being done, because it's been fabulous, but the role of that funding was not about doing research. The role of that funding was about economic development. And I think somewhere along the line we sort of just let the research go, and we're proud of it, and I'm a huge proponent for research at the U and Mayo, certainly that partnership. But I just think we, as we move ahead, I would like to see us link the initial project together with what you and Representative Murphy and others are envisioning. So that's just my two cents.
And I hope the organizations take note of that, because there are people on this committee that remember that that's exactly what it was and hasn't quite worked out that way. Representative Clark, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So this is a totally different direction that I want to go in for the moment. And I don't know whether to ask Representative Murphy or Dr. Terzic, but, you know, there are, in addition to what's called modern or conventional medicine with a lot of technology, there are also very ancient and well-tried complementary medicine modalities that have regenerative results. I'm aware of a number of them. For example, one of the ones that I did a little bit of studying on myself had to do with acupuncture. And one of the only ways to make the optic, auditory nerve come back again has some things to do with acupuncture. Can't be done medically or surgically. So I'm just wondering, in your research, do you have room for looking at complementary and alternative medicine and modalities? Because to miss that, to me, would be to miss a whole field that's, you know, should be explored.
Doctor?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you very much for this question, which is actually the very center of defining what regenerative medicine is all about. So I think it's important for this committee to realize that regenerative medicine is not an equal sign just with stem cell technology. There are many ways to ensure what you pointed out, the self-healing, and in general, the healing of our bodies. So at least at the Mayo Clinic, but I believe at the University of Minnesota, similar approaches are being taken. It's an extremely integrative way of understanding those various tools that we have, whether they come from ancient medicine, whether they come from other type of experiences, natural products, and ultimately very sophisticated newer technology, to truly ensure, if not the fountain of youth, as somebody mentioned, but at least this concept of rejuvenating the body to the extent that we can confront disease. And it's not just the physical health, it's also the mental health that has this ultimate integration in terms of what we're looking. So regenerative medicine is really defined today as a restoration of function and structure of our body. That's how it's being defined, and that's why all the tools that allow us to be accomplished are definitely being considered.
So, Mr. Chairman, so I would look forward to hearing in the report next year. Mr. Murphy, I would ask you to help keep this on top. I mean, I want to know if you're going to work with acupuncturists and some of these other folks who do this. That's absolutely the way they work, to restore and rejuvenate and regenerate. So I guess I'll just look forward to a report that will tell us whether or not you bring any of those people aboard and work with them.
If I may just make a comment, Mr. Chair, representing specifically the Mayo Clinic, there is actually a specific portfolio within regenerative medicine today in addressing these particular topics and in a broader sense involving various technologies of regenerative medicine. So I'm very much looking forward in expanding that field. And maybe as a comment that may address some of the other questions very, very briefly, I think in general for the state to be involved, it's absolutely critical to define that the state of Minnesota has put regenerative medicine at the front line as a priority in terms of whether it's just economic development or more broadly the socioeconomic status, ultimately the wellness of the state. Because as you point out, the number of states do have legislatures. In fact, around 15 states right now have legislatures, from California all the way to Massachusetts and many in between. So we have to position the state in a way to be competitive with the other 15 that I'm aware of. And indeed, we're looking for cures beyond diabetes, if possible, but diabetes is definitely at the very top of our list. So, again, in closing, at least from my standpoint, we look very much forward in advising this committee, working together in sharing our experiences and with our colleagues from the University of Minnesota, working closely to make indeed a very comprehensive, ultimately, act out of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With those closing remarks, I will lay House File 1881 over for passing and inclusion in the omnibus finance bill that will be presented tonight at 6 o'clock in Room 5. Seeing no other discussion, the committee stands in recess. I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development, Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have two bills tonight. One is the Economic Development Omnibus Bill, and the other is a House File 3254, Ben Lean, North Dakota Production and Economic Impacts in Minnesota Study. We're going to do that one first. Get him. We're going to move that to taxes, and we know how Representative Lunchesky, although very, very fair, she typically frowns on moving money out of in and around in her account. So we'll let you deal with Representative Lunchesky. Representative Lean, do you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair, and
Wait a minute. I'll move. Go ahead.
I'd like to move the amendments. Okay. This is my hometown.
All right. Well, would you like to move the bill?
I move the bill 3254 to be passed on to taxes.
To be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you. I'm still a novice.
And now, would you like to move the A?
I would certainly move the A1 amendment with pleasure.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment? as the author would like, to get it in the shape of the author would like, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Briefly. For agreeing to hear my bill tonight. Very appreciative. I'll do a quick walkthrough, answer questions. Basically, this bill would set up a study commissioned by deed in consultation with the Department of Revenue to address North Dakota oil production on Minnesota's economy. Specifically, it'd be taking a look at Northwest Minnesota and the cities that sit on the Minnesota-North Dakota border, taking a look at both the impacts, positive and negative, on Northwest Minnesota's economy and really on the state's economy as a whole. Some of the opportunities that the bill would address would be looking at room for Minnesota's overall economy to grow from this, and then also taking a look at what are the downsides from the increased, and as far as I can tell, as far as everyone else can tell, the very increased production into the next 50 years of North Dakota oil. You know, what are some of the downsides of that on Minnesota's economy? Deed will issue a request for a proposal to complete the study by an outside firm with the knowledge on the areas pointed out in paragraph E of the bill. And then the author's amendment, as Representative Isaacson moved, would appropriate the $150,000 for the study out of an existing fund that Northwest Minnesota cities received that sit on the Minnesota-North Dakota border. This program was set up in the late 70s to address some economic development incentives for these cities in Northwest Minnesota. You know, I think this bill is really important. I think it's important for us to act on this here this year for the overall benefit of Northwest Minnesota and the state as a whole. And I'd certainly stand for any questions.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lean. I can tell you that having grown up out of the Moorhead area and with the capacity of North Dakota to set standards based on the oil money they bring in, it's imperative for us to make good fiscal decisions to have the knowledge that this study will bring in, and I encourage support of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, this is all. This is a fund coming out of the tax committee. It is not coming out of our budget. So if you would like, so we're not dealing with any of the money. If you want to deal with what the study is studying,
yes,
go for it. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lean, my first question of a couple here is on the front page, you talk about the negative effects. What negative effects would you expect to address by this study?
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Right now in my own hometown of Moorhead, some of the negative effects that we're seeing just in the last 5 years of this increased production are more rail traffic. Rail traffic going through Moorhead has doubled in the last 5 years. The way Moorhead sits, we have the two main rail lines pretty much separate north, the north part of the city from the south part of the city. The police station sits on the north side of the city, so you know, emergency calls in the southern part of the city, they're having to go around the downtown area, which is adding, you know, minutes to response times. You know, that's one area where I certainly see coming out of this. I also know that last year in the North Dakota legislature, they cut property taxes by over $500 million. So, you know, on a per capita basis, that'd be roughly $5 billion property tax cut for Northwest Minnesota. And I also know firsthand of the increased economic development incentives that the cities of Fargo and West Fargo are able to offer businesses. So, you know, I think that's only going to increase with the more oil production North Dakota is seeing. Right now, they're at over 900,000 barrels a day coming out of the state in production. And you know, with technology only getting better, from what I can tell, in the next 30 to 50 years, I think that's the production is really only going to increase.
Anything else?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Lean, your answer was very impressive. Maybe we should just cut you the check, because basically didn't you just answer the questions that your study would look to resolve?
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Albright, I think the impacts that I just mentioned are only what I'm seeing coming out of my city on my own perspective. Again, this money would come out of dollars that have already been appropriated to these Northwest Minnesota border cities for the purposes of economic development incentives. And so I personally think that it's, you know, important for us to take a more widespread approach to this, not just from how it's impacting Moorhead, from what I can tell, but how is this impacting, you know, all of Northwest Minnesota, and to that, for that matter, all of Minnesota as a whole.
Representative Leidiger, you got a question, and we're going to vote on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, is the will the study take into account the tax structures of both states, as well as wage structures, minimum wage?
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Leidiger, that is entirely possible. You know, we want to keep this study as wide open as possible to address, as I say, all of the negative effects and positive effects. You know, are there opportunities for us to take advantage of from North Dakota oil production? Are there things going on right now in Minnesota that we can do even better, that we can bring up even more out of this North Dakota's production?
I just follow up to that, Mr. Chair, very quickly.
Well over his 5 minutes.
I suggest that the study do take into consideration the various different policies and in tax structures, because I think that should shed light on a lot of things, and the non-competitiveness of our state because of this tax structure needs to be illuminated. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions. Taking no other questions. All those in favor of re-referring House File 3254 to the Committee on Taxes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Enjoy your time in taxes.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and members. Appreciate it.
Yep. Boy, I got a stack of amendments. Did you care to change seats, sir?
I think I'll move over there.
Yeah. I think I would too.
When you're ready, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having not brought my reading glasses, we'll just do it from here. Mr. Chair, I want to know, has everyone gotten the spreadsheet? We'll give it a minute for the pages to pass out the spreadsheet.
Okay, good. I messed up. Okay, gotcha.
I take it everyone has gotten the spreadsheet?
I believe so. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 2976 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And we'll so move where you've got the bill in front of us. And
Mr. Chair, I have the DE3 amendment.
And let's get that amendment in front of us. And you want to talk about that, please, Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE3, and if we can get it in front of us, I would appreciate that. And pass it in.
We'll put that in front of us for approval. Do you want to? Okay, we'll get it and
let's just vote on this.
We'll do it. Okay. Everything. Got the DE3. Everybody got it in front of them. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Good to go.
Members, you have the target tracking sheet right here. I would suspect in front of you, so I'll go through it relatively quickly. There are some other amendments that will add and subtract things, I suspect, but at the end of the day, we're going to spend about $39 million, maybe just a little shy. And I'll start on line 3, which is the Broadband Development Grant Program for $25 million. The next line down is the broadband mapping program at $450,000. The next line down, number five, is House File 2536, Women Entrepreneur Business Development. Competitive. It's not a competitive grant, it's just a grant program at $500,000. Then next.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Mr. Mahoney, yes.
Just want to make sure. Thank you. When you said this sheet right here,
yes,
and you said the first line was the competitive broadband,
no,
and then you said the next line was the map at 450, but that's not what the next line is on the sheet. I just want to make sure I'm in the right spot.
It's a different one.
Well,
which one would you, Mr. Chair, if I could ask staff, which one would you suggest I use, Harriet?
If you can use the House File 2976 tracking sheet, that one has the DE3 amendment tracking. Okay, so on top of it. I can bring
yeah,
it over
at the
to
top
you.
Of it, does it yes. have the 325-2014 at 553?
458.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, wait.
Mr. Mahoney? Or Representative Mahoney?
No, sorry, 558. No, you're right, 553, you're right.
Okay, I can use that one.
Representative Isaacson?
What he's going off of
yeah.
is the chart that would reflect the amendments. And we haven't
had the second here. I can go ahead, Representative Isaacson.
Are you? Does the one you have reflect the amendments we're going to be going over, and that's why it's on there because we haven't done the map yet?
I do not believe that this tracking sheet with the timestamp of 5:53 p.m. has all the amendments on it. No.
Perfect. Thank you.
Exactly. And
that's what I was the first one. Did.
Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're going to start there. On line three, House File 2615 is a broadband development grant program of $25 million. On line number four is House File 2536, Women's Entrepreneur Business Development Program, $500,000. The Initiative Foundation bills, there's one, two, three, four, five, six. Of them, down to line 11, they're $1 million apiece. We heard these in committee. Today, on line 12, today we heard House File 1881, which is the Regenerative Medicine Research Institute at $450,000. Line 13, House File 3063, Small Business Development Center Program for $500,000. Line 14 is House File 3023, Business Growth and Expansion Voucher Pilot Program for $750,000. Line 15, House File 3180 is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program increase of $1.6 million. And those total up to $34.8 million. Line 17 starts the workforce development. Line 18 is House File 2536, Women in Non-Traditional Jobs. At $500,000. House File on line 19, House File 2976, the accountability requirements are modified, is at $75,000, and I'll tell everyone right now that's a placeholder. This particular point, as we try to get the fiscal note, on line 20, House File 3143, the new employee training partnership, is $1 million. The total appropriations for that section is $1,575,000, which totals out to $36,375,000. Line in the Department of Labor and Industry under Dolly, on line 24, House File 2536, Women in Non-Traditional Jobs Apprenticeships, is $250,000. And then on line 28, Workers' Comp Advisory Council, there's a $31,000 charge for what the Department of Admin believes will be the cost to Minnesota's workers' comp insurance for PTSD. So that comes to a total of 36 $1,625,000. There are a few other amendments. And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Mahoney.
I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Okay. Got the A3 amendment here. Would you like to talk about it a little bit, please?
The A3 amendment comes out of Representative Mullery and Representative Gunther, bringing up the fact that we spent $6 million on Greater Minnesota Initiative Foundations. This amendment puts $1 million into the Urban Initiative Foundations, or Urban Challenge Grant Program, and it splits it evenly between Dakota, Ramsey, and Washington, and Anoka, Carver, Hennepin, and Scott. So we're trying to basically do the same thing we did in Greater Minnesota. We're going to split that for the urban area.
And any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The A3 is adopted.
I have next on my list the A14, which I think is in Isaacton. But, you know, Mr. Chair, if you've got them in a row up there that you want them handed out, I'm fine taking them as you've got them up there.
We have the A13, Representative Mahoney.
You
want
to do them in order?
We can go in order. Okay, just hold up a minute, please. We're deciding numerical versus what?
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay, backing up, Representative Mahoney, please. I'm advised that the A8 would be our next amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I don't think you want to do the A8 because that is a broadband. And if you're going to do the broadband, I think it's A22 is the delete all broadband bill.
Take it back. Amendment. So, Representative Isaac.
Would it be possible that we could save the broadband to the end, all of them? There's a few of them that are all together like that, or what do you want to do?
That's fine. We can take them at any particular lineup that you want.
Okay, so the A8 is...
That's a broadband.
We're withdrawing that right now.
Okay.
So the next will be, and I apologize for any confusion, but we've got a pile of them here. A10. I withdraw that one.
11 broadband.
Right here.
12 broadband.
Okay, and the A11, same. It's in the... Withdraw right here in a pile by me.
A11 back in the pile.
And the A12 was withdrawn. Okay, something we're going to work on here then. A13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A13 amendment. This was
please,
a bill.
Please tell us about it.
This was a bill we heard that allows the Port Authority or the St. Paul Port Authority to meet by phones or other electronic means, which is done by many of the boards and the committees and councils across the state.
And everybody, I'm going to give folks a minute here. Do you have that, Representative Leidy, or you got that? Okay, any questions, comments, members?
Sure. Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just ask what this amendment, if this was from a bill that we heard earlier in committee?
I was advised, Representative Mahoney, I believe, mentioned that, but Representative Mahoney.
We were side discussion, so I may not have heard the question or the answer.
And I'm guilty as well.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? Did we hear it in committee?
Yeah, what bill was this as a part of?
I can't remember the bill number. It was, I'm sorry, I can't remember the bill number. It was
just described.
It essentially, this was the bill.
Oh.
This was the bill.
Right.
What has happened is, for some reason, the St. Paul Authority, St. Paul Port Authority, if they have members, you know, someone on their board is in Chicago, and they're having a board meeting, that member can't participate in the board, and they're under their rules, unless that person is physically there, they can't participate. So what this amendment does is allows the people of the St. Paul Port Authority, if they're in Chicago, New York, or Taipei, to participate according to 13D.015, which is the statute that covers electronic meetings. So they can meet by, they could be there so long as there's one member there. All votes are taken by a roll call vote. They can participate by phone, Skype, whatever. I'm not sure if it's Facebook, but so that's just essentially what we're doing.
Any further advisement on that, Representative Honey?
We're good. Bill. It's on GovOps. Apparently, it's GovOps sent it to the floor, and we are. It's on the floor. You don't have to do it. You can leave it in here or take it out. I'll leave it up to the committee.
We've got it in front of us. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted. A14 amendment.
Not my amendment.
Mr. Representative Isaacson.
Yeah, I'd move the A14 amendment. And let me just walk you through it a little bit. And I was approached by folks from the deaf and blind organizations concerned about their ability to be able to get funds for special needs. They're finding that they were originally separated out and had to go through the competitive grant process where anybody else with a disability did not. And there was a concern with that. And then something like that. Sorry, I'm on the wrong amendment. I'm going to lay this one over just for 1 second. I'll come back to it. That's my fault.
Okay,
I apologize.
We'll lay it on the table. There's a 14.
Oh.
But that one going right there for now. So,
Mr. Chair,
we have organized my thoughts, and I understand now
ready
where we're at with that.
Yes,
and I apologize. That is completely on me.
Proceed. We've got it back in front of us.
Thank you. What I'm going to advise with this is to provide some support for employment, extended employment services with people with disabilities. The language is on the Senate side, and rather than have the committee take a vote and put ourselves in a spot where we might disable the chair's ability to negotiate with the Senate, I'm going to ask that we lay it over and just take this amendment into consideration when you're looking at the conference committee on between us and the Senate side.
Do you withdraw the amendment?
Yes.
Amendment is withdrawn.
And thank you for helping me figure that out.
And the next I have, Representative Mahoney's A16. Move that amendment. This is okay. I'm advised that we're taking up the A16 at this time. And is that
yep?
For you, you're
that is my
tell
amendment.
Us about
I'm
that. Okay,
move the A16 amendment, Mr. Chair.
It is in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a $450,000 appropriation. To do broadband, this is the broadband mapping. Mm-hmm. This is mapping what the data and verify its accuracy through on-ground testing to create a state and county maps available to the public showing the availability of the broadband service at various upload and download speeds throughout Minnesota. In order to measure the progress in achieving the state's broadband goals established in. So we are paying for the $450,000 out of our target.
And question. Representative
One question. Mr. Chair,
we heard this recently, and didn't we hear that this is already mapped, or that we're getting data every 6 months? Didn't we hear that in testimony the other day? Already?
Mr. Chair, when we did the broadband bill, seems like forever ago, we did, there was some mapping done with the Governor's Broadband Council. To that extent, I'm not sure, but I think we have a couple people here that can answer that, and it's Representative Simonson or the new Executive Director, I don't care which. How about if I bring down, call a friend and ask the new director to come on down.
Very good. Please introduce yourself and proceed. I don't know if you have the amendment in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Dana McKenzie. I'm Executive Director for the Office of Broadband Development. And this this language is directed at an ongoing mapping and data analysis program that the state has had in place since 2009 that has been funded through the federal ARRA stimulus funds, and that funding source ends at the end of this year. And this amendment is directed towards maintaining our ability to consider making other investments. Allows us to measure our progress towards those goals. And rather than it being a one-time mapping, it's an iterative process that we actually get new data every month, and so those are continually live and improved maps, as well as some of the other pieces. There's some community survey components to the bill as well.
Thank you. Are you the one who testified the other day that we're getting continuous reports? Because my questioning the other day was, to understand where we are at any given time on what our areas are being served and what areas are not being served. I thought this was either a nonprofit or would Connect Minnesota, for instance. Is that what you run, or does the office run that, or is that the nonprofit? I'm not really sure. I know it's two separate organizations. Okay, that they're providing that data on a continuing basis, and that's of course what we do want. I thought that was being funded by other means. And so if you please shed more light on that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Director, yes, you are correct. There is a third-party contractor, Connect Minnesota, that has been doing this work since 2009, and it is an ongoing process, and the nature of this amendment is to continue that process. And there is not currently another funding stream for that work.
So they were getting the federal dollars.
Yes.
Okay. And that ends this year?
Yes.
And then the $450,000 will take us how long, please? How long will that
last? That would be for a year.
Oh, for a year.
Representative Lighty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how long do we intend to be mapping this over the next few years, and is it going to be costing us $450,000 each year then for how many years? I mean, what's the plan?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, that is a piece that I am working out. As relatively 2 months into the office, the current plan is based on the recommendation of the existing vendor that made some recommendations to the legislators that drafted this language. And knowing what we now know what we have currently in place, and that estimate is based on that. So one of the pieces that I will do over the coming year is take a hard look at those elements and see which pieces are critical as we move into some of the other states' investments, and likely recommend some changes based on a more state-directed program.
Representative Leidinger.
Will part of these dollars go to connect Minnesota? Or do you intend to keep, well, how much of it will go to them?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, because the previous arrangement was based on federal guidelines and federal directive, what the intent of the office is to redefine those requirements and issue a new RFP for which Connect Minnesota will be qualified to respond to, but I would anticipate that we will have a number of options to consider in that process.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your name, I'm sorry, again.
McKenzie, Ms. McKenzie.
Ms. McKenzie. You mentioned that we've been doing this on an ongoing basis, as the author of the bill said, for a number of years, 5 or 6 years. And it's my understanding that that information or that data provided was classified and offered to the people that were, or the carriers that were providing the data. Is it the intent that this information is going to be classified as the same and provided to the carriers, or would it become public domain?
Ms. McKenna.
Chair, members, I believe the language actually addresses that issue, but I apologize. I'm just looking at it. I believe the amendment, the intent was that the data continue to be classified as private data, because that is of a significant concern to the providers who are voluntarily giving us this information so that we may do this mapping.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would that be Section 237? Could I phone a friend from Ms. Newman?
Ms. Newman, your phone's going off.
Mr. Chair, actually, Mr. Eliff is in the audience, and he actually does the broadband and telecommunications, and I think it would give you a more informed answer than I could.
Mr. Ela? Identify yourself.
Bob Ela, House Research.
And maybe you want to the question
Thank
again,
you, Mr. Chair,
Representative
Mr.
Albright.
Mr. Ela, with regard to the question I asked the testifier in terms of the classification of the data itself and going forward, whether or not that becomes germane to the public, or if it's still classified. I'm wondering what section of the code should be referenced in this to maintain its classification status.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that when this legislation was first passed in 2009, there was language that indicated that the data provided by the broadband providers to Connect Minnesota, in this case, was private data, but that the maps that were constructed from that data were public data. This is the first I've just looked at this amendment just now. I don't see language to that effect in this amendment.
Representative Albright.
Could you elaborate in terms of, are you agreeing with me?
I thought you asked Mr. me a question rather than make a statement,
Mr.
Representative.
Chair, if I might,
Representative Mahoney.
Of the testifier, so the way this amendment is written, the way I asked this amendment to be written was that the $400,000 went to the broadband mapping. I didn't ask for private data privacy or anything else. And this amendment, as written, would keep all that data private?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, this amendment as written doesn't address that at all.
So it would make it all public?
It says state and county maps will be available to the public. It doesn't indicate anything regarding the data that's provided by the broadband providers to the vendor to make those maps.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
So what would the classification be of the data itself?
Mr. Ela.
It's simply not addressed.
I have no further questions.
Any other questions regarding the amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, at this particular time, I'm going to actually pull this particular amendment and see what we have to do to address it to get it so that we are covering exactly the way that it has been done in the past. The data given to whomever is going to do the map would be, I believe it's private, and the map itself would be available to the public. And that's really what my intent was. And we don't do data privacy in this particular committee, so my mistake, and we can fix this in ways and means. And if there's a way that Ms. Newman could construct this just to put $450,000 in for mapping, I'm not sure that's the way to go. I think we should probably just pull this for the time being and see if we have to add anything in ways and means.
I'm going to go with that, and we'll withdraw the amendment at this time. And the A17 is the next one that I have, and I believe that Ms. Newman is going to give us some explanation on the A17.
I'll move the A17 amendment, Mr. Chair.
It is before us. Please proceed, Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment to the appropriation that was made to the Legislative Coordinating Commission last session. The appropriation was for $150,000 a year, and the executive director of the LCC said that part of the rider language was omitted from the bill because the $150,000 on page 2, where you see the new language, $100,000 a year is for the captioning of the legislative webcasts, and $50,000 a year is for a small grant program that the LCC actually administers, and it's to assist other state agencies to facilitate their adapting their technology systems for closed captioning. And so this does not change the appropriation, it just clarifies what the intent of the appropriation was for, that was made last year.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Questions on the amendment, the A17? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? A17 adopted. We have the A18, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will move the A18 amendment.
A18 is before us.
Most people on the committee know or have heard at least the phrase, the Olmstead court decision. As I understand it, and I'm going to be at 100,000-foot level more than I'm going to be anything else, is there has been a judgment or an agreement in a courtroom that we need to do better on our vocational rehabilitation and how we treat people with handicaps or give our services to them from the state. It has to be more encompassing and a variety of other things. The governor asked for $500,000 this year and $2 million in the tails every year going forward. I don't have a tails target at all in my bill other than those that are already spoken for. So this is a $500,000 appropriation for this year, 2015, to get the bill up and get the office up and running and start making the plan, and then come back in a budget year and we can decide if it's a $2 million appropriation or what, you know, whatever the dollar figure is that we as a state deem that we can afford. So this is basically an answer to a court decision that we have to come up with a better plan for how we deal with people with handicaps. Or disabilities, I should say.
I've heard amendment question. Representative Lightyear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear, that's not on the spreadsheet, right?
These are the additions to the spreadsheet. All the amendments. Okay, I just wanted to get that clear. I'm fine with this amendment.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 18 is on.
Can we do the 820, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, okay. 820. The A19 is withdrawn, so. 820. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, this is an example for legislators carrying a bill. I sat down yesterday evening, and I was going through all the language in my bill. And the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity did not seem to fit right. And so I started looking it up and realized that we had it in language in the wrong place, going to the wrong place. This is part of that $500,000 that is going for, I better get the bill out so I read it correctly. The women's
entrepreneurs business.
Thank you. Entrepreneurial group, entrepreneurial startups. Half of it going to the northern part of the state, and the other half going to the agency here in town, Women Ventures. And so in any event, when I started checking through it, I found that I had the wrong name in there, and a different agency was going to get that $250,000. So today I'm admitting my mistakes and fixing them. And that's what this bill, that's what this amendment does. It's rather than send it to the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity, it inserts Women's Business Center at Northeast Entrepreneur Fund, which is based in Duluth.
Is everybody following that here, members? Question? Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure the Women's Business Center at Northeast Entrepreneurial Fund, this is
Entrepreneur. Not the AL, but Entrepreneur Fund.
Entrepreneur Fund.
Yeah. I said it wrong the first time, too.
I want to make sure this is the right group.
Yep, I did. And I called them, and actually... Mr. Chair,
and we know that.
Honey.
I actually called them this morning, they were grateful that I had called them because they were a little concerned about that. They had, and actually, their director drove down and had a conversation with me this afternoon. Said, "Yep, this is who we are. This is what we do. The Entrepreneur Fund is a place I visited about 3 or 4 years ago." Mary Matthews has just retired about a year ago, somewhat of a legend up there on the Arrowhead region about economic development. So yes, I did double check.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, any further questions, members? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? 820 is adopted.
I don't know if we've got any other than...
And 21 is withdrawn, I'm advised. 22, Representative Mahoney.
Now that's another broadband. If we might do 23 and 24.
Okay.
And did we do 14? We've got a few others before we get to the broadband.
We'll hold off on this. I'll let you make sure you get the pile going there. Abu, thank you. The 823, Representative Mahoney. Move it to get it in front of us. It is in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This just deletes language in the delete all amendment. On page 7, line 14 to line 18, we were under the impression that the competitive grant, the language that prohibited someone who got a direct appropriation from applying for a grant or someone who got a grant from applying for an appropriation. We thought that had been dropped off last year, kind of the black hole of legislative language as it moves from conference committee to the floor. And we put that into this bill, and we found that it is not necessarily, it did make it into a correction, a revisers corrections bill last year, and the language is not needed.
You heard the amendment explained. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A23 is adopted. A24, Representative Norton.
I will move the A24 amendment, and I guess we'll just do that one.
And this is in front of us. Please proceed and explain the amendment.
Yeah, this is the apprenticeship pilot bill that I had, you've heard, and it has significantly less funding than we asked for in the original bill, but it's a start.
The author of the bill is fine with it.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Any questions from members? Seeing none, all in favor of the 824 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 824 is adopted. Yes, I've got a workforce accountability.
Correct.
A14-1006.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, if I might ask staff to make sure that I'm not getting ahead of myself here. Ms. Newman, the A14-06, A14-13, and the A25. Do we need all three of those?
In that order.
So, Mr. Chair, I will move the A14 amendment.
Very good. That's in front of us.
Yes, sir. This is something we heard in the committee, but it does do a few changes. So, and it dramatically ratchets it back. Because, frankly, the cost of doing it as written the first time was in the millions of dollars. And this committee doesn't have millions of dollars to do accountability right now. What this bill does is shrink the accountability down to working on adult workforce programs. It starts the collection of the data. It starts to put the data in a system that we can actually use, and then calls for an independent audit, or however you want to phrase it, an independent contractor to come in and check the data to make sure that the data is actually being done correctly and is indeed is doing the job that we are asking them to do. This one, I have not had time to deal with the fiscal note that is heading here. I think it came to me at about 6:05, unfortunately, and we're going to see if we can figure out something a little bit more. But this kind of gives you what we're talking about. We heard this bill in committee. We're looking to figure out how many people are going into these programs, how many people are finishing the programs, what they're making as they go in, how long they're in, and what they're making when they're done. And then we're tracking them for, we're changing it. In the bill, as it's structured, is 4 quarters and 8 quarters, but the department already picks up 3 quarters, so we're just going to go 3 quarters and 8 quarters. That way that keeps the cost down.
Very good. You've heard the amendment. Question, Representative Leidinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm looking at the bill for the first time, and that page 2, I mean, that's where you go down the whole thing, and we're telling the commissioner to to track all this data? I mean, there's a lot of different things here. I guess my question would be, are they already doing this, or is this all going to be new? There would be one question.
Mr. Chair, all of this data is already collected. It's just collected in a form that it really takes a really, 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 really smart person to kind of pull it out and make it somewhat usable. And I'm trying to get with this, I'm hoping that it just gets to having to be a really smart people like all of us.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to think.
I'm good. I get it. I got them all over there, and they're all kind of going,
how's he going to get us out of this? Well, okay, so they're collecting this. You're changing the format on they're changing the format of how they want it collected, and they're putting it in a whole new format. I mean, it sounds like we're really getting down into the nitty-gritty I'm really not sure why we have to do this, but probably because there's a fiscal note that's attached to it. It's going to cost the money to do this, I suspect. But it just really seems like we're getting into the weeds on this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger. Yes, we are collecting all of this data, and what we're trying to do, you've been on the committee long enough that workforce training groups come in and say that we're doing a really great job and here's how we're doing it and it's the best job that you could ever imagine being done. And we've got a return on investment of $1, $8 for every dollar you spend.
Right.
The next group comes in, it's just a change of faces. The words are all the same and the ROI is the same. But it's and I'm a trustful person, but when you hear the same story 20 times in a row, I don't want to say anyone's telling me a tale, but I don't have any way of verifying it, and neither do you as a legislator. What this bill does and all this data allows us to verify it. Now, today, if I was to ask Deed to do this, to pull this reports, and they've pulled a couple for me, they have to actually manually go in and put the queries in one at a time, have them come out, go in and get another query, wait for that one. It's very time-consuming, very human interface intensive. What this does, what I'm asking them to do, is figure out how to do it with a get all this information, put it onto a website that it's usable, say in a drop-down format, so it can tell us whether they're a high school graduate or not, or have a two-year degree. If they're African American or Indian or Somali or whatever, or Hispanic or white Caucasian. If they have any number of different particular ways. And that's what we're trying to do with this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you
for that explanation. And I mean, you're right on. I mean, I think we'll get better data from Deed then. Thank you.
Let's see here. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, I think you're going about this in a very organized way. You're taking five or six job training programs out of the 150, 60 some we have, and we're going to be able to judge them from the same criteria, each one of them separately, so we can analyze the data that comes from that and decide what we're going to do with those job training programs. Is that correct?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, yes. We're starting with a small group, and we're going to hopefully get them up to the whole 150 or better.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, on page 3 on line 3.21, it says that the commissioner shall contract with an independent entity to conduct a net impact analysis. I'm just wondering what you envision that, or who that independent entity might be. would it be a CPA firm, a cost analysis, independent consultant? What type of a firm would be envisioned to do that work?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, yes. I mean, I just don't want Deed to be like Deed. I think they're a really great organization, okay, but I just want somebody else to check their work. And whether it's a CPA firm or some other type of consultant that does that particular, hopefully they Deed would do a request for proposal and bring out the best one that they can with the least amount of money.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, on page 4 then, starting on line 4.3, it talks about that this cost-benefit analysis is going to be available to the public in an electronic format, but it doesn't say when. I think the inference is at the same time that it's made available to the chairs of the committees that it's pertinent to. But I'm just wondering if we might need to be explicit in the date for that delivery as well.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, that's a good observation. I had gone on the assumption that it would be put at the same time as it was made available to the chairs. We can certainly see if we need some language in there and add that in.
Mr. Chair, I have one follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, on the bottom of page 2, just so I think we're clear in terms of what our expectations of this first report and thereafter, the data is going to be mined and collected on the even-numbered years. So for 2014, as soon as this is enacted, they will have a short year in order to collect the data, and then that report is going to be the first inaugural report would be report on January 15th of 2015.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, that is my intent. I am pushing them pretty hard because I want this for the next chair of this committee, and I hope it's me when we make decisions on how we're going to fund workforce. And then be able to point to this particular study, to all the other workforce training programs that come for money, and say, here's a standard you're going to have to meet. If you're going to want money, you're going to have to meet these standards. Because if we don't have some sort of standard, they can all set their own.
Mr. Chair, I just have one final question. And Representative Mahoney, on page 4 on line 4.12, it says the commissioner in partnership with the Governor's Workforce Development Council. My final question is, who is ultimately responsible to produce the report? Is it the Commissioner or the Governor's Workforce Development Council?
Representative Mahoney.
I'm going to hold the Commissioner accountable.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Mueller.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, on the analysis of the job programs and job training programs, everything you do on trying to get analysis is fine, is great for me. But I remember back in 1998. I had a real thorough analysis of the job training programs that was supposed to report back, and Carlson vetoed it. The next year I gave it to my friend from Fairmont, who, different governor, and he signed it into law. But the problem was we got back almost nothing beyond the initial 6 weeks to at most 6 months from anybody. Are you going to get at that, the long range? Because these job training programs, just placing somebody doesn't do much. And so is there some way you're going after that so that we can really have effective job programs?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulley, In the bill, it calls for them to do a to report three quarters in after they place somebody, and then again 8 quarters. So that would be, you know, basically 1 year or three quarters. Excuse me, three quarters of a year and 2 years. So yes, we're trying to make this long term. This is my goal here. Is to every 2 years get this report, so that the chairs that come after us, when the new building is completed and we're all retired and gone from here, the chairs that come after us, the legislators that come after us, can use this guideline when they are funding these type programs. Because again, this is how we do our this is how we train the workforce that we as a state are known for, one of our best selling points, and yet we don't have any data, and we need to get that. So my goal is to get it ongoing and for as long as it's needed.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, and thanks for going there. I hope you try to next time go a little longer, because what I'm getting feedback nationally is that we need to track where they are 5 years down to see if we really have effective programs at getting people into very good jobs and stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you for going on this.
Any other questions in regard to this amendment, A14-1006? Seeing none, all in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And we have another A14 of Jim Mahoney at 1013.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can explain the first piece, but I'm going to ask staff to explain the second one on the page 2, line 27. We're just deleting 3. I'm going to ask staff to explain this particular one, because
I'm going to move the amendment real quick and get it in front of us.
We'll move the A14-13 amendment.
Please proceed. Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, the change on line 3 of the amendment, I think, is strictly taking out a typo that 3 is not supposed to be in there. The amendment on line 4, I think, is a clarifying amendment on the data privacy stuff.